It's methodical. It's happening.
Welcome to 2-Bit Encryption, the officially unofficial podcast for Mr. Robot on USA. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
We have seen Season 4, Episode 9, titled Conflict. No conflict in this episode. I was surprised by the title. What do you think of this one?
Is that an actual 409 error code, or is this the first one that they just said, really? It's just 409 conflict?
Apparently.
Really? Huh. So I want to break this out in two parts. I think this episode is actually really good. It's exciting, and it's gripping, and the hacking is above average with a couple of important points of dissent. And I thought like the stuff between White Rose and Price was incredible. I thought the stuff between like Darlene and Mr. Robot was incredible. And I quite like seeing the Deus group get their comeuppance, and it felt appropriately triumphant. The other part of it is that this is kind of like Luke Skywalker blowing up the Death Star and Star Wars. It's fucking awesome, but it doesn't really make a lick of sense that this guy shot down this moon in a space plane. And this hack, like I've said this, like was it last week or the week ago? It's like kind of like, meditating is like, how do you destroy the wealth of the top 1% at the top 1%? Like, it's not going to be as simple as like the Joker sitting on a literal pile of money in the Dark Knight and covered in gasoline and burning it. Mm. It's got to be something more complex than that. Lo and behold, that's exactly what Sam Esmail chose to do. And this is why I invented the term tot dab, the one thing that drives me absolutely batshit about this show, because I don't think Sam Esmail either understands economics, or he chooses to endorse this kind of Star Wars economics where the bad guys have an economic Death Star that can be destroyed by a person in a one-man fighter plane.
Yeah.
And that makes zero sense to me. It kind of really fucks up with my sense of disbelief, but there it is. The Death Star was exploded. It was fucking awesome. I'm there for the throne room celebration, but it's also a lot more sci-fi fantasy than I was prepared for. But I should have been prepared, because that's how all the economic stuff has kind of, for as good as the hacks are, the economics of this show have always been absolutely Looney Tunes.
Yeah,
and I'm going to try until we get to the very end of the episode to lean on the awesome part of blowing up the Death Star rather than harping on how you can destroy a moon with a space plane.
And I have to say that I'm pretty sure Sam Esmail understands that this is not real. This is not how truly wealthy people would be hurt financially. But because I understand it, like there's no way I understand something that Sam Esmail doesn't
about
economics or technology or filmmaking. Any of that stuff. I think this is a conscious choice he's making. And I don't know if he's making it because he thinks it doesn't matter to the story, and the story he's trying to tell doesn't rely on the fact that like this is super realistic. But it is a little strange given how sort of realistic the show was supposed to be, right? Like in many other ways, in the psychological aspects of the show and the hacking aspects of the show, they take great pains to actually portray it in a very realistic way. They don't do that with the economics, apparently. Like, I don't know.
Well, my question to that in response is, then what's the point? I mean, obviously a point of entertainment is to entertain, and Mr. Robot does that very well, but this, as much as any other, or maybe more so than most entertainment, seemed to have something that was trying to say. And if it's just drawing light, maybe it's just to draw light to this problem, because essentially the docs part of this is the Panama Papers that literally happened 3 years ago, and it showed a vast, insidious international conspiracy of the very wealthy to deprive the countries they live in of tax revenue, and to steal wealth from nations, and to hide it in criminal offshore accounts. And it named names, and it named it named amounts, and it outlined how this all happens, and zero has been done about it. So maybe this is like a way to draw attention to that. It doesn't seem like it. It seems like, it seems like this is as big a fantasy as anything else. And I watch this, and like, if it has a point, the point I take away from it is the only way you can beat the the wealthy criminals running the world is through some kind of fantasy means. What you need is the Master Sword from Zelda. Mm-hmm. You need to go to the third graveyard on the fourth gravestone. You need to push it, and instead of a ghost popping out, there'll be a staircase, and you go down there, you trade 12 heart containers, you get the magic sword, and you go take it to Death Mountain, and you fuck...
No. Turns out that's just a boomerang. That gets you the key you need to unlock the first.
And I'm like, that's depressing.
Dungeon, and then you get to hit your mall. Yeah.
That's just depressing.
Right.
I don't know. That's the takeaway. But it was really awesome when they blew up the Death Star.
I have a couple of defenses that maybe I think the show is trying to lay out of this whole scenario.
Lay it on me, because we'll
get into it, I think, as we go through the episode. Because I want to point out the places where it's trying to do something other than just saying, we took their money, we win. But yeah, we'll get there.
Housekeeping.
Club members, this housekeeping tidbit is for you. As you probably know, Jim and I love Christmas, and we've had this nice little tradition where we drink up and do podcasts and live watches of movies with some kind of coordinated Christmas theme, and we do especially drunken lunches with Jim and Aaron on Fridays. This year, the theme is Mary McAllister McClainmas 2, Christmas Harder. We'll be doing the sequels to movies we've covered in previous Christmas celebrations, such as Home Alone 2, Jingle All the Way 2, Die Hard 2, and, as is tradition, a final surprise movie for Christmas Day. And non-club members, we have not left you out. Last year, we did a very Giamatti Christmas, which was a 12-minute animated short/epic tone poem about Paul Giamatti desperately trying to get a last-minute Christmas project greenlit, and it received... mixed reviews. So Jim and I decided to release it to a wider audience, hoping it gets the appreciation that I don't... Does it deserve appreciation?
Reviewers suck. This I know. There's one thing in life I know. Reviewers suck at everything.
Yeah.
I'm particularly proud of that project. I thought it was great.
I still love it, and I think more people should see it, and we're going to take steps to make sure that happens. So if you want to see the full schedule and access all the Christmas season celebration, go to ballmove.com. You literally won't be able to miss it. The very Giamatti Christmas is at the very bottom of that page, so scroll down and check it out. See what you think. Finally, me, Cecily, and Jim put out the second episode of One Weird Trick over at swizzbowl.com this week. This one, we give advice on dealing with depressed parents, managing a difficult career transition, and late 20s dating en way. En way. How do you pronounce it? If any of those sound good, please check out baldmove.com to subscribe or search for the show name wherever you listen to podcasts.
Should we start with a recap?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. We start off with Mr. Robot and the rest of Elliot's family of Alters gathering in the boardroom of their mind. There's a lot of talk about what this room is, but they're discussing the latest developments in Elliot's psyche. Mr. Robot decides he needs to finish Elliot's mission, and afterward he'll, quote unquote, show him what he did, which is very ominous. And that Darlene might be the one who can actually help them help Elliot.
And they talk about the mom aspect of this personality or whatever the hell it is. Talks about how this poor boy has been asleep so long we might lose him forever.
Hasn't woken up since Interrupted.
I'm interrupted by, well, that's not true. He woke up for Darlene. And I'm like, that's interesting. The whole, what did he do? Like, some people are speculating that the what he did was beat his dad to death with that baseball bat.
I've seen it thrown around that perhaps he caused the Washington Township
and some
problem.
Kind of adolescent or pre-adolescent hacking attempt.
Yeah. Something. There are a lot of theories out there. None of them have like conclusive proof. I don't think conclusive proof exists so far.
So 2 weeks ago, we didn't have time to talk about all the feedback we got. And one of the feedback I had to skip was by AJV. And he talks about this concept of an Alderson loop. And I'm going to just go ahead and read his email now. So, hey, guys, I had an interesting programming nugget that relates to the concept of an Alderson loop. Essentially, it's an infinite loop that occurs when you're iterating through a loop that breaks specific conditions, but those conditions are not actually attainable. Easiest example is if you code an error box to pop up that can only be dismissed by clicking OK or cancel, but you don't actually have an OK or cancel button on the error box. That's actually, I think, the canonical Alderson loop. It's some dude at Microsoft, last name Alderson, created a dialog box, could only be dismissed by hitting OK or cancel and forget to put the buttons there.
I've never heard that term, though I intimately understand the concept.
Sure, sure, sure. I didn't either, actually. Made that mistake a few times. Like, yeah. I've been doing computer shit since I was like 12 years old, and I'd never heard it referred to as this, but here you go. I don't think it's a stretch to apply this metaphor to Elliot, who has been in an endless loop of denial and pain that can only break out of once he fully admits and accepts the horrors his father had inflicted upon him when he was a child, which was revealed in this episode. So I read that, and then this week in researching the show, I read people talking about this Alderson loop concept and the fact that, like, we know that Elliot has a series of personalities that he's mentally locked up and compartmentalized. You know, that's been, you know, baked into the show since season one. Mm-hmm. And we also know there's just a lot of statements where this iteration of Elliot that we see, that we become our friend that we've become acquainted with over the years, is a recent construct. I think Darlene or Angela mentioned that he was born a month ago. Mm-hmm. He's so fresh that he forgot that he's the Darlene's brother and tried to kiss her. There's a lot of things that he doesn't have. He has vague awareness of his own past history, and people are always correcting him. So there is an interesting, compelling theory about how this Alderson loop is almost like the concept in Memento. That you have this man who's driven by a trauma. If you haven't seen Memento, it's about a guy who is trying to find a murderer of his wife, and he can't, but he's got severe short-term memory loss where he can't form new memories. Every 5 minutes, his life resets to his awareness of right after she dies. He's got various ways to keep track of what he's doing. He's got Polaroid cameras. He makes notes on his body. He tattoos important facts on his body. But one of the reveals in that movie is that there is a other person who is taking advantage of his condition to use him as like a hitman, to like feed him false clues and information and send him after different targets. One of the most interesting theories, I think, is that there's a conspiracy amongst his personalities to like use this damage in the system to like, you know, have him do something useful with his life. So essentially, you know, we know that right before we started following him this show that he got went through a court a process that sentenced him to mandatory counseling because he set a server room on fire. Mm-hmm. There's this theory that he might have caused something to go wrong in the Washington Township, that there's like these personalities essentially reset the main Elliot and point him in a new direction to cause mayhem each and every time. And I kind of like that like the mom or the Mr. Robot is like, you know, kind of using him as a digital hitman.
Yeah, it's an interesting concept. The one thing that I don't want them to do with that concept is to return to it at the very end. That would feel bad to
me. Well, because if
we just start the loop over again as the finale.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's like one of the leading.
I know. Yeah, I was reading some of this stuff.
One of the leading proponents of it is saying that that's exactly what's going to happen. That like you're going to have a hello. He's going to wake up and there's going to be a hello friend, and he's going to forget everything that happened in the last four episodes or the last four seasons.
I guess I would be okay with that if the world has changed. And this episode maybe seems to say that it is. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I guess, like, it's a sad ending for Elliot, I think, but it could be a better ending for all of humanity.
Well, but it's, like, one of those things where it's, like, this is the latest try that they've done, that they've tried to get even with the world. So it's, like, maybe
They want to help Elliot. Like, I believe Mr. Robot when he says he wants to help. Would the personality that is sticking him in this loop be, like, his mother or young Elliot or...
I don't know.
Another altar that we're not privy to yet.
Because, yeah, like the kid aspect of him. I don't know. This third identity is very mysterious. And I also think that it's a mistake to refer to them as just three, because clearly his mom is part of this. And clearly this, you've already got four identities right now.
Right.
So, like, I don't know what that. There's the idea that this kid Elliot is like his, you know, that was the part of him that got frozen when Mr. Robot split off and started to protect him. Mm-hmm. And that there's this, the I guess this theory that I like the most is that the third version of Elliot is kind of like the true adult Elliot, who's kind of, you know, aware of all the, but they try to keep him locked away because maybe he's the, I don't know, he's the craziest one of them, or he's the one that like tends to fly off, and I don't know.
Yeah.
But
angry Elliot is what people
call
it.
Why don't you like, if so?
I just don't really like big reset buttons on shows.
Yeah, but is the name Alderson is pretty fucking damning.
I know.
You know, really that's a loop that you cannot escape from. Mm-hmm. So like, I hear you on that. But the thing is I also think there's a way. I also read an interview with Esmail this week that claims that there's a 2-episode block. I think it's the final 2 episodes. That he envisioned as and scripted out as a feature film.
And they've sort of worked this season backwards from those.
And the whole Mr. Robot concept of a series has been to, like, you know, work up to that feature film kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I could easily see a feature film like Memento being just kind of like closed loop that you could just see resetting over and over and over again. And it would be weird. So it seems to me that that's just the direction we're going to head down to. And that can be awesome. Like I said, Memento is fucking mind blowing. It's a great film. But I don't know.
I'm more okay with that in a film because I've invested 2 to 3 hours of my time. But when I've invested 4 years, five years of my time,
yeah,
I want a satisfying conclusion to that. Not something that's going to make me say, well, I guess the main character's fucked and he's stuck in a loop. Oh, well.
Well, it's satisfying because like it could something be like really depressing and soul crushing and satisfying? Because I've personally experienced that.
But I really, for me, that is not the reset button. The reset button to me is not satisfying. Like anytime you're looking into a snow globe, anytime it was all a dream, anytime.
I agree that's
stuck
bullshit.
In a loop and you can't get out of it. Like, all that stuff. I'm not saying it's bad writing. I'm just saying I don't particularly prefer it.
All right.
Fair enough. I hope that's not the way this goes. But I think the idea of Ellie being stuck in a loop is interesting and probably right.
Mm-hmm.
I just hope he gets out of it. I hope this is the final iteration of that loop.
Yeah, the opening shot of this, of Mr. Robot going down that long blue corridor, I thought was amazing. In fact, when I first started watching this episode, I was looking down, fumbling with something to, I forget, I was dismissing something, hadn't fully engaged my attention, and I kind of caught this horn of my eyes. I thought that like they somehow did a digital morph when he was walking towards us, and then like when he went in the darkness, that they smoothly just blended him together walking away. So it looked like he just kind of walked to the middle and then walked back and came. And I thought, like, holy shit, that was amazing. And then I kind of annoyed they didn't, because there is that hard cut where they go from back. And I think they could have done it, and that would have been really trippy and mind blowing. But it was it is a beautiful looking shot, and it's a trippy way to open the episode. And I will say that this stuff is the thing I think I'm most invested in. Like Elliot's character and his development is far more interesting than, you know, robbing Deus Group blind,
because it's been, I think, expertly told,
and it feels real. It feels, you know, it feels grounded. It feels very relevant, and it's got an emotional punch. Mm-hmm. So,
and coming into this season, I wouldn't have guessed that's what I would be most invested in.
Correct.
I agree. Still very much on board with like, what is White Rose's plan? How is this hack going to go down? Those are the things that I really wanted to see. Mm-hmm. Now I'm more about how does Elliot live his life after the fact,
after he
knows the facts, right? So, yeah, it's exciting. And to the point where I've sort of, like, White Rose's machine is just a footnote at this point to me, but we've got 4 more episodes, and I'm thinking a lot of it has to do with that.
Every single time I try to think about what White Rose's machine is, I just, like, I don't fucking care. Because the Congo thing is got to be busted, right? Like, this is such tight timing,
and,
you know, this, like, unless they're going to hit the reset button on that, and it turns out that...
And I think that's more what White Rose's breakdown is about.
Yeah. Right.
Like I said, we'll talk about it.
There's going to be a delay. She ran out of time. But I don't know, because the other thing is the way everyone... I would be inclined to think one of the reasons I'd be on board with this being like, you know what, this is actually a false victory, because it's not that easy to destroy wealth, yada, yada. But everything about Zhang/White Rose's performance told me that they believed that this was a death blow to their efforts.
Yeah.
and
let's save some of that for the
the
scene when we get there, because there's a lot of stuff I want to talk about.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Around that. So the next scene, we move on. Mr. Robot continues with the hack along with Darlene,
mm-hmm.
who realizes it's actually not Elliot she's speaking with and has a million questions. Just a million. Mr. Robot answers exactly zero of them.
Mm-hmm.
Philip shows up, which
is
risky.
To be fair, she's kind of being cagey herself because they both had a pretty fucking full day.
Oh, yeah.
Full Christmas day. And neither one of them are telling each other shit.
Yeah. If I'm comparing days here, I think Elliot's had it rougher. He's been hit by a car. He's been chased by the police.
Found out his dad molested him.
Yeah, had to come to grips with that at gunpoint,
mm-hmm.
with a insane person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's gone through a lot. And Darlene, you know, was almost killed, but
In some stranger
lost
drama.
Her girlfriend. I don't know what she is at this point, but yeah, there's some bad shit happened to both of them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah,
I
Mr.
do love
Robot's
the fact that
over.
she can tell just by the
sweetheart. It's the one word. Like I immediately knew when he said sweetheart.
Oh,
before they turned the camera around to Darlene, I'm like, oh, she's gonna recognize that.
But I also think that like that was the straw that broke the camel's back, rather than like because her whole demeanor was kind of like there's something off here to something off here, and I like the fact that people that know Elliot can tell immediately when it's and even like Vera,
they've done a great job with that.
You know, when Kristen Slater took over the wheel in that episode, like Vera, mm-hmm. right away knew like, oh, this is not Elliot anymore. And I think that's really cool. And they sell that just with, you know, swapping out actors, but they've also done it a time or two when like Elliot has to do it, you know, from a perspective where we don't get to swap out to Kristen Slater, and it's great.
Mm-hmm. So Philip shows up, which is extremely risky, and he asks for a favor, wants Elliot to destroy White Rose's machine using a thumb drive that he claims has everything he needs to know.
Is this separate from the Congo project? It is, yes.
The machine?
Is the machine the thing that's in the Washington Township power facility?
That's a good question, because I've always viewed the Congo project as a machine, because you need to ship it, but
we have seen
possible.
A massive machine, and like if...
Yeah,
I don't understand what the USB key had nothing to do with the hack. Like Elliot didn't open it, he didn't look at it, and
it's now they're post hack, so he can go through it.
So like if what they did this episode would have destroyed the machine, then what the hell is Price doing here? I think that this is like a two-step type of thing. Like,
oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, this had nothing to do with destroying the machine.
So you do now think the Congo project is separate from the machine?
No, I think they could be one and the same.
Well, then how did fucking up the shipping of it permanently not, like, why did Philip have to come and specifically say?
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay, so this hack does fuck up the Congo shipment.
Yeah, it's like if a house was on fire and Elliot was going to go put it out with a fire truck, and Philip Price was bankrolling that project, and he says, I need you to do a favor, make the house wet. Like, okay,
but,
I'll do that,
Philip. But I think
there's
an assumption built into that. The Congo thing is off now. Because their money has been stolen.
Isn't it?
Why would that be the case?
Okay, well then you're making me wait till the end of the episode to make that argument, but like...
Well, I'm just questioning, like, what are these funds for? Are these funds to bankroll their lifestyle? Are these funds to bankroll specifically the Congo project? And if they're not for the Congo project, then why does this affect the Congo project?
I mean, my argument is they are for the Congo project. She needed it for...
I don't know that that's true, but I do think the Congo project is in jeopardy now because of what Darlene did, the audible that she calls in this episode. Like, doxing them, I think, is the more destructive thing to the Congo project than taking the money in their bank account.
That's wild. That's wild to me.
Okay.
Well, we can
discuss it further.
Yeah, okay.
Philip makes the claim here that what Angela wanted all along was to destroy this machine. I feel like that is very much not what Angela wanted until maybe the very end.
Yeah, always
when
wanted.
Philip talked her into believing that White Rose was a fraud.
Agreed. I think that's her final disposition, but like, yeah, it wasn't.
Philip has a distorted view of Angela, in my opinion.
Oh, of course.
Throughout this entire episode, but they don't play it like that.
Uh-huh.
Toward the end, they play it like Philip has known Angela better than White Rose did the whole time.
That's possible, but not better than Elliot or Darlene or anything like that,
or us as an audience member.
Yeah,
I just don't I don't agree with his assessment of Angela in this scene.
It's hard to say because, like, I think that if Angela understood White Rose being behind her mother's death, then you could say that what she's always wanted was to destroy the thing that hurt her mom. Mm-hmm. And then there's a brief period of time where she got brainwashed by White Rose into thinking that she needed to actually support it because that's how she would get her mother back. That's how they could reset and put everything back to the way it's place. And then when that illusion was shattered, she was back on to fuck what I now understand to be the thing that caused my mother's death, this White Rose project. So, I don't know. Okay. Some Ben Kenobi certain point of view shit.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I like that they set up here this sort of vulnerability in the plan, because this plan with the two-factor authentication codes sort of requires Elliot to tip his hand before the hack is complete. And it sets up a lot of stakes with these codes. Like, if somebody gets suspicious
and they need to run us all simultaneously, because if they spring any part of the trap first, then at least one person will be able to get away.
Yeah. And importantly, they could shut down, you know, the transfers, right? Like, if somebody gets wise to this, calls up the rest of the Deus group and just sends a text like, we're being hacked, the plan could go off the rails.
Yeah.
So good stuff there. Mr. Robot explains the hack as Philip arrives at the meeting. Unfortunately, White Rose is the only one there. Robot answers some of Darlene's questions about Angela off screen, and Darlene says how much she misses Angela. Mm-hmm. And then Philip and Mr. Robot both realize something is wrong with this meeting. So Mr. Robot and Darlene start digging, and they figure out there are now two meetings happening. One with Philip and White Rose, and the other one with the rest of the Deus group.
Yeah, they hacked Wellick's phone
to
see his calendar so they could see that he got invited to the right one. But this sets up the tension, because now they've got 99 of their targets at one location and one that's stubbornly in this other location, and they have to be two places at once.
Yeah, this is much better than just going through with the hack the way it was planned. These audibles during mid-hack are what I kind of live for with this show.
Sure, sure. And I was kind of half right that, like, because like last week I said it would be really cool, I think, if Darlene came and saved the day. And she does. Like, she's but in the end, there's like a Wonder Twins power activate. They both had to do their thing at a very high level. And it was also very... The time pressure was insane. Like, the amount of time that they had to do all this complicated stuff was like, what, 15 minutes of real time?
Yeah.
And the way Angela, her audible, like you said, well, we get to, I don't know, maybe we won't. The way Angela's audible is forced to call is like, actually.
You mean Darlene?
Darlene, yes. Yeah. The way Darlene called the audible to get these people exposed to where she could get their phone sniffed or whatever, put a big clock on Elliot's side of the equation.
Right.
So it's like the way this stuff kind of elegantly worked. Like I said, I really like all the hacking aspects. Mm-hmm. There's a couple things I quibble about, but I like the way it went down.
So Philip reveals to White Rose that Tyrell won't be coming to her meeting as Darlene goes to the new meeting site and Mr. Robot stays behind to get White Rose's number. How much of this hack and when do we want to describe it? Because I feel like easily get lost in this hack and not understand what's going on. And I wanted to kind of provide for people who aren't as technically savvy as the really hardcore Mr. Robot viewers.
Yeah, I mean, we can if you want to walk us through and I'll chime in.
I think we should wait a couple of scenes until we get to the actual part of the hack that it takes off.
Starting to get stuck in an Alderson loop of all the things I got to remember to talk about at the further in his episode myself.
Yeah. It's a complicated episode.
If Jim says wait, then I sleep.
There's a few great lines in this episode from Philip where he's talking about Tyrell. He's saying, I heard he wanted to travel to the Southwest in a 65 El Camino, wind whooshing in his hair or whatever. And just the flippant way he's dismissing all of these grand plans.
Plus, he's got this perfect, like, old guy voice and such a punchable face.
Yeah.
And I'm an old man. I gave up on foreplay. Let's skip right to the part where you try to fuck me. And they're a smug off because they both feel like they've got the other by the short curlies. and only one of them's right, and they kind of like play back and forth between the power and you know, like who's got the upper hand. And it's great because these are both really great actors and really despicable characters, and
yeah,
it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to watch.
Here's where I think they're laying some of the groundwork for what I think is the actual thing that gets to White Rose at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Phillips says, "I'd expect a mutiny when the Deus group realizes that Tyrell won't be in attendance for your, you know, meticulously planned meeting." I think what they're trying to say with that is it's not so much about the money here. It's about the faith of the Deus group members. And if you don't have that, you have nothing. Because, like, when you pair this with the idea that, like, Zhang, White Rose, whatever, has built the Deus group from the ground up
mm-hmm.
for decades,
mm-hmm.
The idea that she could do anything without them is a pretty unbelievable one.
Well, and also they set this up with that exposition bomb that Philip, the Price, like, unleashed, what, 7 episodes ago, mm-hmm. where that the Deus group is going along with her on this big plan, but it's increasingly skeptical and begrudging.
Right.
Like, okay, well, I guess we owe the White Rose our loyalty because they haven't given us a bum steer yet. But there's been increasing grumbling, increasing concerns that, like, this is kind of a stupid plan that people are making fun of them behind their back.
Mm-hmm. And Tyrell's a weak choice for CEO anyway.
Yeah. So they've set this up pretty nice, that where this is kind of like a Waterloo situation. Like, this kind of loss of faith could be devastating to White Rose's global domination going forward.
Right. And I'm thinking that's what they're trying to go with more than the money, but
I mean, the money's part
of
it.
They also go with the money.
Yeah, the money's part of it, for sure.
So after...
Did you look up this matotoxin? Because the thing that she said that she's going to inject into Price, that was his, like, quick death.
Oh, no.
I looked into it, and it's like this foreign, and it's incredibly deadly, but I couldn't figure... I don't know what it actually does to you and what
kills
kind
you,
of...
Kills you, probably.
Yeah, probably kills you. Kills you in your sleep painlessly, I guess, but I don't know.
Okay.
It's a really exotic. I'd never even heard it before. You know, it's like, huh, I wonder what. And then there's just like a 3-page Wikipedia article where it's like super, super lethal in mice. Apparently, it opens up all your calcium channels.
Hmm.
Have you ever had your calcium channels open, Jim?
Twice a week, yeah.
Let me tell you. Whoo, if they all get open, good night.
So White Rose assistant suggests that they call an audible on this plan and shut down the meeting, get everybody out. When White Rose refuses to do that, his assistant quits, or her assistant quits.
No one has
ever picked a better time to quit a job, by the way.
Right?
Like, this is the last chance. The last train is leaving.
Yeah, last chopper out of Nam right here. Did this seem ridiculous to you that this junior, like this Grant 2.0, Grant come lately, is just going to, in English, dress White Rose down and rage quit and then, like, tee up Philip the whole, like, I don't know, Zhang, but, like, it's bad management when your employees either storm off or blow their brains out. Yeah. Like, she's been so disrespectful to White Rose up to this point, and I compare that to, like, the relative pins and needles that Grant had to walk on, and he still got himself, his brains blown out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand why. She must be someone really important to White Rose. Like, is she a niece? Or I'm trying to think of, like, why he would allow this to happen. Like, when she storms off, why doesn't he snap his fingers and the Dark Army shoot her?
It's a good question. I get the impression over the past few people who've been close to White Rose mm-hmm. that there's a grooming process, that there's some kind of, like, establishment of trust and all those things, just based on a lot of stuff that Irving said mm-hmm. last season.
But that's the problem. It's like the Darth Maul problem, right? You have Darth Maul in episode 1 and you think, oh man, it's going to be the big baddie for the whole trilogy, but you kill him mm-hmm. in the final act of the first movie and then you got to introduce a new one.
Yeah.
And like nothing. So like if that's true and this whole fucking show takes place in the what, 7 months? So Grant was like her second in command?
They got the problem of they haven't shown us the grooming process for these people.
Yes.
And so we don't know why White Rose is so trusting and why the assistant would have
Yeah, in like what, 6 weeks or like a couple of months, you know, she would go from replacing Grant to like being able to say, fuck you, I quit on the eve of her greatest triumph.
Yeah, they're asking us to assume a lot.
Yeah.
Which
kind of makes me think that they should have kept Grant around. Maybe humbled Grant.
Or bring
and
Irving
him
back. Everybody wanted them to anyway.
Bring Irving out of retirement. Have him sitting there on the beach at the beginning of the season getting a phone
call.
Man,
how much better? Okay, the season couldn't be that much better, but with
Irving,
it would be that last like 10th of a percent that I really wanted.
Like imagine Irving storming out.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
It would have been a lot funnier. A lot funnier.
Right. Yeah. Because it's not only she storm out, that like I thought switching to English was a
disrespectful,
really big fuck you, like really adding salt to the wounds, you know. So, and it was played that way, like Price like going, whoa, you know, he's like such an asshole.
Oh,
he's like the guy at the bar listening to a couple fighting and like, you know, audibly reacting to it.
Right.
It's like, come on, man.
Got something to say, buddy. Yeah, so then we go to Darlene scoping the new meeting location, and it does not look good. This place is impenetrable. We get a tour of the facility via some of the dais guests and also the hotel employees. That certainly doesn't help the situation, but Darlene has an idea. I really like this tour through the thing. Mm-hmm. A, it feels like it's a fucking hitman mission briefing.
Right.
But also, it really serves to show us how locked down this place is, right? Like, because in any other fucking movie, I'm thinking, okay, we're following this this server, and then she's going out to smoke. She kind of looks a little like Darlene, like she might be able to passport.
I thought we were going to see Darlene. Yep,
and they shut that shit down, telling us, no, everything
like,
you thought
would work. Even the waiters are not allowed to get around. Like, it's like, now get the fuck back in the building. You can't,
It's a brilliant piece of filmmaking,
yes,
I think.
Yes, agreed.
There's also some stuff in here, other things we get to see, such as the back of what I think is Donald Trump's head. I couldn't tell.
Snatching those hamburgers with his little tiny hands.
Yeah. I saw a comparison of him picking one up versus the other guy.
I mean, so I got two minds of this, because I think, number one, Donald Trump would be flattered to be considered a part of the Deus group.
Yeah.
Because
the top 1% of the 1%,
Because I don't think he's there, and I don't think he's that important. But they did establish in previous seasons the fact that like White Rose might be throwing her money and her might behind Trump because he would be, you know, a useful idiot for them.
Yeah.
So like, okay, maybe he is being allowed to hobnob and all that because, you know, he's going to be the president, and that's an important arm of their portfolio. So
yeah.
But the way it was filmed though is more like he was, you know, equals with these people, and that's a weird thing for Sam Esmail to assert, I think.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm gonna give him the benefit of the doubt though. Is probably like a Home Alone 2 situation where he just really wanted to be part of the party. He says, look, if you guys are going to film in my hotel.
Is Cipriani a Trump facility?
No, I have no idea, but it would be funny if it was.
Yeah. I need to shake Macaulay McCulkin's. What's this guy's actual name?
Macaulay Culkin.
Thank you. I need to shake his hand. I need to meet Mr. Robot.
Right.
I need to meet Mr. I need to look him in his big eyes.
How about this? We give you a burger. Sold. Sold. Done.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was also wondering if the guy that we follow through most of this hack is not like a Ukrainian ambassador.
Yeah.
Perhaps. Like,
interesting.
How far down does this dig go? Right.
Right.
I don't know.
It's a weird dig because, like I said, if I was Trump, I'd be flattered.
Yeah.
It'd be like, you know, being on the boardroom of Spectre in a James Bond movie, like weirdly flattering. You know, if you're like a Russian oligarch, like you want to kind of your ego must be flattered to be like in a James Bond film. Same way here.
I mean, I'd be flattered if I was in a James Bond film.
Shit. Yeah. Even
call
as a villain.
Call me Daniel Craig. So we go back over to Mr. Robot, who calls Philip's phone, and White Rose answers. White Rose tries to convince Mr. Robot, and then Elliot, who shows up, that Angela is still alive and that she can prove it. It almost works on both Elliot and Philip, but Elliot has absolutely no reason to trust White Rose and tells her to fuck off. And then he gets a message from Darlene telling him to turn on the TV, and he sees a new F Society video doxing all of the Deus group sending the meeting into a panic.
Mm-hmm.
And White Rose into a panic.
This is literally a less stylish Panama Papers, though. Like, the whole secret files and all that stuff that actually happened.
If the Panama Papers were accompanied by a cool video of a person.
I kind of wish they were. Yeah. Instead of this, like, meek disclosure to respected journalists, just like, fucking, yeah, get the Guy Fawkes mask out.
The theater.
Yeah.
Get some entertainment in there.
Sex it up. Sex it up. Maybe that's what what Sam's trying to say. It's like, we gotta be louder and stupider about how we go about.
Yeah, use our own tendencies toward the idiotic sensational to really sell the stuff. Yeah, could be. Do you want to talk about like Philip and Elliot and Mr. Robot like kind of being almost sold on this, like half sold on White Rose's assertion that she can prove Angela's still alive?
No, I don't know what to say about it because all the times I've watched this, I was kind of like, I think the guy who plays Philip Price sold it, but like, it's hard for me to believe because as he himself says, like even me who saw Angela's lifeless body drug away started thinking that maybe there was some kind of chance.
And he also knows what this plan is apparently, right? Sure. Like he hands this drive over, says, here's everything you need to know about the machine.
Yeah.
I think he understands what White Rose is trying to do.
And I do think that we will probably see some version of Angela. It's just not going to be Angela. It might be a simulation of Angela. It might be an artificial intelligence replication of Angela. It might be some, but it won't be actually Angela because otherwise they need to explain to me how Philip and we all saw Angela's brains get blown out on his back lawn. So... but I do think the way they're talking about it is there is going to be some version of that happens. It just will be, it'll be counterfeit. It'll be, it'll be an illusion. It'll be a fantasy that she's selling, while she gets to, inherit the entire, but there's also something there. Like we were talking about a couple weeks ago, where is there a possibility that we might overall be for the societal changes that White Rose is trying to, bring about the Earth?
I don't know.
Because he makes fun of this, like, oh, this new world you want to usher in. Well, the last time we talked to, when we saw her articulate the new world she wanted to usher in, it's a world that would tolerate people of differences, like, transsexual people, transgendered people, rather, homosexual relationships, like things that I'm broadly like, okay, I don't know if I would want to like hijack trillions of dollars in the world's governments to bend that to my will instead of just through reason, discourse and persuasion and pleading your case in democratic, institutions. But like it's a Magneto situation, like I wonder if they're playing with that because when Philip Price said, oh, your whole plan and your glorious new world that you're trying to build, it's like, I don't know, maybe. Maybe we would want to live in her glorious new world. It's just we don't approve the methods.
Yeah, it's entirely possible. We don't know yet.
Yeah.
Got to see what that is. There's another thing in this scene that felt very dissonant to me, like the music. The music in this scene is trying to tell me, it's trying to convince me as an audience member to trust White Rose. Mm-hmm. It's building and building to the promise of seeing Angela again. And I very much felt the show trying to force me into some kind of sympathy toward White Rose here that I knew I shouldn't feel.
And then the music just falls off a cliff as soon as Elliot pierces that illusion.
Yeah, and it was really effective as an audience member.
I thought all the music is really good. I think the badass hacking music was like some of the... I mean, it's hard to compete with what Reznor and his composing partners doing on The Watchmen.
Yeah.
But there was a couple of, these like really bass heavy hacker themes and motifs that I was really grooving to.
I feel like television as a whole has realized how important music is lately.
Yeah, yeah.
You got Ramin Djawadi out there doing his
stuff. Pay some fucking professionals to do some good work and it pays off.
Absolutely.
I do so they did that. The whole hopeful music's good. The only critique I had is the triumphant music that they play towards the end was a little bit...
Is it because you didn't feel like this was a triumph?
Dude, I'm going to be honest and say that, like, yes, my bias towards that could affect it, but I also thought it was a little bit royalty-free SoundCloud.
Okay,
A little bit of, like, off-brand explosions in the sky.
Uh-huh.
You know?
I feel you.
A little bit. Whereas the other stuff I felt like was like, yeah, this is original and it's exactly what the scene needs. And so, but yeah, it could be my own personal biases against how I felt about the hack itself.
Speaking of the hacks. I don't know how we're going to recap this next 15 minutes or so of the show, because
pretty threaded.
It is. It's very threaded, and it's all tied together with Philip's speech to White Rose and the climax of the hack. And a narration by Mr. Robot at the end that says we won. It's multi-threaded
and running on all 8 cores.
How? should we just say, like, the hack happens, and then I can kind of explain what the hack is?
Sure, let's do that.
Okay.
So what are they trying to do here, Jim?
So they're trying to get the phone numbers of all the Deus people. And that was established episode 1, episode 2, maybe, when he runs down, like, what the Deus group is, and they're all in All Safe, and Ellie comes up with the idea, we got to get him in the same room, we got to set a meeting. All of this starts back then.
Mm-hmm.
They got to get the phone numbers of all the people in the Deus group so they can use those phone numbers to get the credentials to transfer out all the money, essentially.
Because they have the accounts, they have the credentials, but they don't have the two-factor authentication. And what that is if you've ever logged into something with a password, like your bank, and then your bank wants to text you a number, and you respond and you plug that in, that's two factors authentication.
Right.
Two different ways to authenticate.
Yeah. And so there's a lot of complicated stuff technically going on here. Mm-hmm. Like Darlene's plan is to use something called like an IMSI interceptor or something to basically capture all the traffic going from the phone, between the phone and the cell tower, so that she can collect their phone numbers.
Yep, and then run them against a Python script that just matches phone numbers to accounts.
From the Cypress National database that they took in the previous heist.
Right, because obviously there's thousands of phones hitting that cell phone tower. She's narrowing it down to the ones that match up with this the information they know on the account.
Well, they haven't even hacked that cell phone tower, right? Like, that's the thing. She's just getting all of the numbers that connect to that cell phone tower at all.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So it's not really about narrowing it down. Oh, the search against the database is matching phone numbers with the actual accounts.
Yes.
So the other part of this that Elliot is doing is White Rose is the one straggler, and they need, like we talked about earlier, to do all the accounts at the same time so they won't be alerted until it's too late.
Right.
That something is gone wrong. So Elliot has to get White Rose's phone number, and he doesn't have the IMSI equipment that Darlene has. They only had one physical box that they could use here to capture phone numbers. So he's got to find another way. And his way is to essentially fish the telecom employees' passwords and, well, their authentication credentials from them.
So what it looks like when phishing is when your grandma clicks on a link from her quote-unquote bank that says,
like, your social security number has been deauthorized. Yeah, click you on need this to call link, us now. Yeah.
Click on this link and log in. That link is not your actual bank site. You put in your username and password. Now they have your username and password.
So and they use that to
Elliot needs that one out of probably hundreds of these telecom employees to be stupid enough to fall for it in a 15-minute stretch.
And it has to specifically be a telecom employee that has those credentials, right? Like, he tries a whole bunch of credentials, but only one works because that's the first employee he comes across who is high enough level to have access to this tower.
Yeah, and all this is a little bit improbable that you would be able to do this in such a short period of time.
It's cutting it real close,
especially once the senior, like, they'd be the last people to click on a link like that. You know,
you would think so, to give up their passwords. Yeah.
Like, I thought phishing was pretty fucking hand wavy at this high level of a hack, but whatever. It's somebody was stupid enough, or I've been in situations
where
bosses were not smart enough to be trusted with the information that I had to trust them with because they insisted.
Yeah.
Almost every boss I've ever had in a company wanted the master password to the network. And I'm like, that's just a really bad idea because I know your data hygiene, dude. And it's a bad idea, but there's a trust element. And so, like, maybe, the vice president of cell phone operations is the idiot that did it on Christmas Eve, and he's got the authority to go in there. But yeah, so it and they did say how, like, high stress and high stakes and last fucking minute this all was. So
And they really ramp up the tension too, because, it's not just a matter of, like, well, we'll get access to the cell phone tower and have White Rose's number.
Mm-hmm.
no, they have now thousands of numbers all connected, like you said, to this one cell tower. Mm-hmm. They don't know which is White Rose's, so he's got to send that over to Darlene so that she can, at the same time, so that she can run it through the database, find the match, and then at the same time run all 100 transfers.
I also thought it was funny, just as a programmer myself, is like that nothing went wrong. And also like little touches, like Elliot, even though he's doing this all in like little sleep and last minute, had like still enough like professionalism to have a special thing. They like do a countdown of how many he's got and make it all turn red when he's got 100 of them.
Uh-huh.
And like that's some nice bells and whistles you put in your last minute slapdash hack that nobody got. There's no string transformations or concatenation problems.
Yeah, I mean,
there weren't
a lot of people were like, I can't believe she's doing this all from her phone.
I couldn't fucking do that. It's really cool that the cell phone tower's database was exactly the format they needed it, even though they planned on this Python script planned on just reading it these phone numbers off of the air. Like there's real life, nothing works this cleanly. But
I mean, yeah,
it makes it super. Yeah. And also Elliot and Darlene are super hackers. So there you go.
True.
They're leaping tall buildings.
But that's basically it. That's the entirety of the hack.
Now, and here's the thing.
I think it all checks out more or less.
Here's the thing that's one of the top dab things is that these bank employees have to, they're so secure, they require these physical fobs that are a much, much stronger security than the cell phone based two-factor authentication, because as we saw in this episode, that can just be sniffed over the air, you know? But all these like powerful Deus group guys just get like, you know, a 6-digit code sent to their cell phone, like your grandma at her.
Well, that's another layer.
Chase Manhattan account, you know.
right. but it is another layer, right? Because they had to get through both of these layers. So it wasn't like they weren't protected by the fob. They just weren't protected by their own fobs.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess like, I don't know. It's borderline. I'm willing to give it to him.
Sure.
Like I've seen.
I got bigger fish to fry,
Sony,
so I'm the way I'm saying.
A global corporation like Sony gets hacked, and you see that they have in their fucking database unencrypted credit card numbers and passwords and shit. And I'm like, how could a company this big that knows the importance of their data and the ramifications of losing that data ever store data like this? And yet they do. So like, I don't know how much security. Is too much security.
I think that's a great question for the Dark Army to think about. And I think the Dark Army is different from Sony Entertainment, but...
I agree, but also the Dark Army is the Dark Army. And you, just, you don't fuck with the Dark Army, right? Yeah. And if you do, they have other means to come after you. So, like, I don't know.
Well, we'll see. We'll see how much means they have when they're fucking broke.
Yeah, completely broke. So... I was a little surprised, and we talked about this a little bit in the last scene, but Elliot is clearly like shook by White Rose's promise. When he talks with Darlene in this scene, you can tell that like he doesn't want to say too much because he knows that he was just about to at least hear White Rose out before, you know, Darlene calls up and says, "Hey, check the TV."
Yeah. The way they portray it is almost like Saruman from Lord of the Rings, where it's like he's got this silky voice and it's almost magical. Like, you know, you'd throw down your swords in front of him, even though you know it's a bad idea. It's wild that both Elliot and Price almost fell for this. Like, it's like such a... He's so charismatic, and Price explains it as like, you know, his greatest weapon is to use people's own regrets against them and weaponizes
regret
it to destroy
predator.
Yeah, regrettator. I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah,
Edie Wong's fucking amazing. He'd probably talk me into a couple of things I'd regret.
Yeah. Like hacking.
That's what it is.
Like
sure.
Turncoat on the FBI. That
yep,
kind of thing.
Yep. That's what I'm talking about.
So there's also an assertion by Philip that Elliot truly hurt White Rose. And
the only one who could.
And the White Rose believes it too. Why? Like, man,
this goes back to the father, the son, how obsessed she is with the symmetry. Like, it's like some kind of flaw in her weird way she sees the world, that like Elliot is this product of this tool he's this a second generation tool that she herself created. And
I guess I've never quite gotten my head around it.
I don't either.
Like, it's borderline.
I wonder if that will, because I think this is the core of the mystery, such as it is in the show, is like, you know, why was Mr. Alderson so important? Why is Elliot then so important? Why is he the only one? Why does it have to happen now and not 3 months from now?
But scenes like this tell me that I should already know the answer to that question.
Well, but
and I don't feel like I
Price,
do.
I don't think Price knew. He says, I've always suspected that he's the only one that can hurt you. And like, this is a confirmation of his private theory, but like, we don't know why he thought that. I think it's tied up it's tied up in her some kind of weird sense of irony and time and like using.
It is. But the problem here is, I think, some sort of weird, like, all of those adjectives, all of those descriptors are why I don't quite have my head around it. And I don't know if I'm supposed to be feeling that or if I'm supposed to have already understood exactly what Elliot means to White Rose.
Well, I'm feeling that, and I read a lot of stuff on the internet and of email, and it seems like nobody's got the... So, like, if you're feeling lost, you're in good company.
Okay. And if somebody, like, if one of our audience members understands this, feel free to write in and let us know, because I'm super curious. So another thing about this scene is I think that the account overdrawn messages that show up on White Rose's phone are a little silly. There are an awful lot of them. I don't know why they're even going off, unless they ran this script too many times and they're trying to pull $140 billion out 15 times in the span of 2 seconds.
I think it's a little bit of a lampshading the fact that like Asmil probably knew he's flying a little too close to the sun here. It's like the idea that White Rose would have all of his her liquid assets in a single account is mine, like, let alone a single bank, let alone a single account. So having multiple accounts firing off, and then maybe if I'm a super duper billionaire, I've probably like, you know how many ticky tacky transactions you get? Like yesterday I bought a Red Bull at a gas station for $2.50 or something like that. Like imagine that at a billionaire scale, there must be money just flying in and out of accounts all the time. So if you took one to zero, it would instantly start like...
I don't think I would have alerts set up on my phone for account overdraws because it never fucking happens.
No, that's right? The funny thing. Like, she's got some kind of overdraft protection you know.
She signed up for that. She clicked the checkbox and was oh, yeah, if my checking account ever goes...
Like, the Cypress National giving her face, like, you just approved 100 F-16 sales in Saudi Arabia. Or if you made this purchase, then press C to confirm.
Right.
It's like, does she get that kind of stuff too?
Yeah. They shut down her card.
You just bought 5 tons of lithium in the Congo, but we see that you just had stake in New York.
A foreign transaction. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Did you travel? Reply yes.
Cypress National's fraud prevention team is hard at work for you. Yeah,
yeah, it's bullshit.
It is fucking silly, but what else? You needed it had to happen this way so you get the shots of everybody being angry and so Philip Price could shine her on one last time.
And he does a hell of a job. Maybe the best line of the entire episode is where he says, you didn't lose, you just ran out of time.
Which is got to be the...
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's a direct assault on the thing she prides herself the most.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely love it. And it's really just poetic, too, because, like, Philip took what White Rose cared about the most. Like, White Rose shot him, but Philip didn't care about his life. Philip won the game of spite, right? And then he got some sort of I guess revenge for killing Angela.
Yeah. And beating him was more important than winning himself. So,
which he said seasons ago.
Yeah, it is wild that the main villain of season one got like a triumphant end. You know, I guess it's kind of like Darth Vader throwing Palpatine down the reactor, the reactor chute.
Very much.
Yeah.
And I didn't think I wanted to see that 2 seasons ago.
We just need to see Angela show up in a taxi and, you know, pull him in and drive him off and burn him on a funeral pyre.
Oh, boy. That really fuck with every perception I have of this show.
Yeah. I want to see the Death Star blow up, man.
Okay. We got to talk about this narration from Mr. Robot at the end, because the hack goes off. Philip breaks this news that now, okay, White Rose is broke. She causes White Rose to personally gun him down in the streets in view of anyone walking by. And Mr. Robot sort of narrates his victory, and he says, and like that, Rome falls. No more Deus Group, no more top 1% of the top 1%, no more controlling every piece of our lives, no more playing God without permission. We took them down, all of them.
Uh-huh.
This all feels too storybook to me.
No, this is why this is ridiculous, because the top 1% of the top 1%'s power does not rely on the liquid wealth that they have in a bank account. It relies on the assets they own. It has nothing to do with
money. People with that much money don't give a shit about money.
I don't think that's true, but it's like their power is not entirely based on their money. It's the assets they own, the companies they own, the favors that they owe, the information mm-hmm. that they know.
That's what they care about.
Yeah. And they use money to acquire those things. But like, if you took all of the money away from, you know, like you drained all of Jeff Bezos' bank accounts the next day, he would mm-hmm. just convert $1 billion of Amazon shares into liquid cash the next day, and he'd be back in business.
And he would call in all the favors of his buddies.
Yeah, and all the logistics companies he owns, all the companies that rely on Amazon. Like, he would have so many allies that he could call upon.
Right.
That the idea
he's not going to get the account overdrawn messages because he's going to be on the phone with his banker going, yeah, don't worry about that.
No.
And the banker's going to go, fine, okay.
Yeah. No, to do that in a single night would require, like, an act of terrorism of which the world, and it would cause so much, like, you'd have to destroy entire companies, entire, like, thousands of airplanes.
The 5-9 hack is actually closer. The 5-9 hack, if you wipe away enough records of uh-huh. things, like real estate ownership.
So you just make business impossible to conduct? Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And not just for those rich people, but for everyone?
Right, that's
disrupt
what I'm
the
saying.
Entire economy? That's closer to something that might have an effect.
But you have, just like in a 5-9 hack, you'd have massive collateral damage. Because like, the actual destroy the wealth, you have to destroy the things that made all the value that they have, and that's not just the zeros and commas they've got in their bank account.
No, and you have to disrupt the connections also, that they have, which I think is the more compelling argument here for why White Rose might have this reaction.
Yeah.
I think it's the trust of the Deus Group.
Yeah,
means more to her. This Congo project is what means something to her.
Sure.
The Deus Group is helping her with that, and lost the faith of the Deus Group, they'll no longer help her, and therefore this Congo project is in jeopardy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I the other thing, there's a lot of other things, because I feel like if this happened, like, so I think what you're supposed to understand is that they took this money and transferred it into some kind of Bitcoin or cryptocurrency account, and then just threw it away. Much the same way that there's like some dumb fuck in the UK
maybe
that has like $200 million worth of Bitcoins on a USB drive that he's trying to find in the junkyards of London or whatever. Like, it's something kind of Elliot did. He transfers a digital wallet and then deletes a digital wallet.
I think it went into Romero's estate.
Uh-huh.
Oh, that's really? What I think, yeah.
I mean, that I think is implausible, because there's not enough like cryptocurrency in the world.
The market cap on Bitcoin is like a few billion.
They did show that like maybe that they're being hoisted by their own petard a little bit, because one of the things they did in response to the 5-9 attack is use that lack of faith in the currency and economic systems to press this e-coin thing on mm-hmm. the world. So maybe, you know, that is something that could be done. But it just also feels like at the end of the day, on a hack of this scale, that what you could just do is restore from backups and just put everybody back.
Yeah. People are talking about a lot of solutions, fork
this money would not be in one bank. It would be across many different banks in many different countries. They'd also have piles of like real, like, you know, non-liquid but close to liquid thing, like gold and silver investments. And this is impossible.
Take out Jay Leno's wealth, you'd have to get his garage too.
Sure.
Like, you can't take the money in his bank account.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, but they needed to have a Death Star that had to have a thermal exhaust port that is not shielded, and the Empire doesn't think that a single manned fighter can, you know what I'm saying? It has to be silly so it can work and it can be a crowd-pleasing moment.
So here's the other thing. Let's throw this monkey wrench into our objections. Yeah. The entire time, the threat that I think Elliot has been surviving under
mm-hmm.
is that he will go public with all of White Rose's Congo plans if he's killed. I think he's got this dead man switch that releases all of that. Now, Darlene's just gone ahead and done that.
Mm-hmm.
So in my mind, the more devastating thing here is not the money. It's about essentially the loss of White Rose's lover forever. Like, White Rose believed with this project that she could bring him back somehow, right? So now that everything is public, the Congo project isn't going to happen, most likely. The Deus Group isn't on her side anymore. Everything she's worked 30 years for is gone. That, to me, is the more obvious reaction that she has here. Even though Philip is saying, you're broke, we're all broke, ha 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 ha. I don't even think Philip quite understands it, because Philip doesn't know the things about White Rose that we do.
Plus, he thinks it's a bunch. The other thing is, he thinks it's a bunch of bullshit, which it could be, but White Rose doesn't think her plans are bullshit.
So I don't know. I don't know if the Deus Group, and that's what makes me think that maybe this storybook narration that we got is going to prove to be false.
So in what way?
Mistaken. In that we didn't actually get the top 1% of the 1%. This barely affects them at all, like we're saying, because there was that scene where Irving, I think, took Elliot to the building or whatever.
And showed them partying in the height
of the
fire.
So they don't give a shit. Yeah. Like, you destroyed the economy, they're still partying. They don't care.
Because
they,
once this gets put back
together, they're going to make more money off
this.
They'll
buy it all for pennies on the dollar.
Right. This is an opportunity to them.
Yes, exactly.
So I wonder if that's not the same thing that's going to happen here. And it would still be devastating to White Rose, because the project is now dead.
No, I don't. Yeah, I mean, I don't. Man, I just don't know. To me, I think this story is going to be White Rose is now a wounded animal that is lashing out, and her back is to the wall, and she's going to come after. In fact, it's kind of bizarre to me that she makes eye contact with Elliot. She has her goons right there. It seems like she could just be like, run across the street and get that fucking twerp in the hoodie, that pipsqueak in the hoodie. But I don't know. Maybe it's more of like she just like freezes up. Like she can't even process what she's seeing. The fact that this is the guy's wife. I don't know. But like, obviously
it's going to be uncharacteristic for her.
There's four episodes left, and at least an episode or two is going to be the wrath of White Rose.
Some of that will be dealing with Elliot's other altar, showing what he did, quote unquote. But yeah, there's a lot of time left.
But my expectations are going to be that I'm expecting this to be definitive, that this is essentially, that point in the movie where the villain is beat and they can no longer win and they're wounded, but they can still kill the hero.
Yeah.
And I think that's, even though I don't think it's plausible and for all the reasons we just talked about, I think that's what Sam Esmail wants us to think and believe. And, you know, now we got to see White Rose strike back, and then we have to have revenge of the Elliot and a return of the Elliot, or I don't know, the return of the alternate personality, and then we'll be fine.
All right, two other things I want to talk about.
Okay.
This last scene is White Rose calmly applies her makeup, and the FBI comes knocking. What in my mind I am picturing is a Scarface-esque battle rages in the halls of her home.
It's just those automatic weapons and people screaming.
Yeah.
How many Christmas trees got dashed through the floor?
I heard Sam Esmail shout, say hello to my little friend. lots of Christmas trees hit the floor.
Hello, in parentheses, to my little friend. There's just Christmas trees just stacking up like so many FBI agent bodies. It's a grim harvest being reaped down in that lobby.
So did the FBI expect this kind of resistance? Because clearly they come
armed.
I don't
think so. No.
Did the doxing include the Dark Army connections? Because maybe they might expect
it. Well, so my thing is that like they were on the move because of the Dominic thing. They're going to respond to Dominic. She's going to tell them exactly what's going on, and they're going to be in motion by the time. Like, I don't think the FBI mobilized this hit squad in like 15 minutes. I think they've had a couple hours to prep this, and I think they think that they're going to roll up on some high placed Chinese diplomat, and they'll probably have armed security. I don't think they're expecting a fucking army to fight.
Yeah.
Because, like, clearly next week is not going to end with, or not going to start with White Rose in, you know, handcuffs.
Or being killed, yeah.
Yeah, no. It's she's going to fight her way out of this, and then Elliot's going to try to fight his way out of it. And that's the thing. I don't see how Elliot wins. Like, there's lots of evidence that Elliot, if he's not stuck in an Alderson loop, is going to be in a body bag at the end of this season. There's been a lot of, like, you know, death howls aside, there's been a lot of, like, you know, hints that it doesn't look good for him, and I don't see it either. Like, she's got nothing to lose. There's no reason for her to keep from killing him now. In fact, every reason to do it. And the only way he survived at this point is because he always has been able to pull something out of his ass or prove his usefulness or something like, and she's just not going to hear it anymore.
Yeah.
So how does he win at this? I don't know.
I don't know. Probably doesn't.
Joey Badass.
Yeah, Joey Badass versus the Dark Army.
Yep,
sure.
I got him. Yep.
Dom Wick, Joey Badass. You got a real problem on your hands, Dark Army.
Yeah, yeah.
The other thing that I want to talk about briefly is Darlene's promise to Dom that she could save her from her fate with this hack. Turned out to be true, I think.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, assuming she survived that stabbing, which I hope she did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she actually did it.
Yeah, I think that's if my headcanon's right, then we're going to find out that Dominic is... Oh man, that would suck if she's actually somehow leading or like on the scene of the raid and she ends up getting, I could see that too, like her in a car outside, like following it on a radio and she's wounded. And
I kind of want a confrontation between her and White Rose.
They've had one. Like she would recognize her. Absolutely. She walks out of that, like whatever, like they talked in China. That was the whole like clock speech and the they met. So, like, if they walk out and they see each other, I think that White Rose would be like,
huh,
Jacques, you know?
I forgot about that.
Yeah. Am I wrong? Did I imagine that?
No, I
that?
Think you're right.
Okay. Yeah.
She was certainly in that hotel where the massacre happened.
Yeah. I thought that they had a meeting with Director Zhang.
Or did she get left outside? She got left outside while Santiago went in there.
Is Santiago the one that had that meeting?
Yeah. Yeah, because she was in the lobby. She got shot, right? Oh, yeah. You're right. I forgot about that scene.
Yeah, and I don't know exactly which scene it was, but I do know that they have met. And I think that it would not be implausible for them to recognize each other if they met on the street.
Yeah.
So, but I don't know. Dom's probably in a hospital. So he'll probably be fine.
Yep, probably. That's it. That's all I got.
Yeah, that's all I got too. Shall we get to write the feedback?
Let's do it. Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering the Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwais is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday. Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
You can send feedback, of course, to robot@baldmove.com or get on our forums, forums.baldmove.com. Let's start it with Adam H. During the last scene in the last episode, Request Timeout, I noticed more than even before the all safe sign that now says AI safe, prominently featured behind Mr. Robot. Got me to thinking, as I don't think it's by accident, that maybe the last personality is in fact an AI that Elliot has already built and doesn't know about. I keep thinking that Elliot, as a flesh and blood person, cannot possibly defeat an organization such as the Dark Army, even if he took all their money. But what if Elliot, with the help of a final personality built on an AI, or maybe the AI being the third personality itself, or even crazier, Elliot built an AI with multiple personalities that couldn't easily be thwarted even against something like the Dark Army? Defense in depth. Do you think there's any there?
Is this whole series taking place in an artificial intelligence consciousness on his laptop?
I mean, that's, you're not being, are you being serious?
No, I'm being
okay. Because I'm like,
come on. I just told you that I wouldn't like that ending. Yeah.
There was, man, I remember there's a theory a couple years back or a season or two back. It said something about there was an implication that Elliot might have a chip in his head.
Yeah, I heard some people saying that, yeah.
And that there's
and
like,
that he was an actual robot, yeah.
Well, or he's like a cyborg, something to it. It's like, I don't know. Because Sam L. Smales. Public comments, and maybe he's a liar, pants on fire, is that this isn't as sci-fi as you think. And that's why I'm really keeping my expectations modest. I don't think there's going to be some Matrix thing. There might be some kind of like virtual reality or, you know, some way that like, you know, I'm thinking of like that concept in like Rick and Morty where you've got a Rick constantly reliving his the first time his daughter said I love you, and they just farmed that maybe you can like plug into something that like makes you feel safe and secure, and but to what end? Like, is that something you're going to put the whole world into? Like, if I take Esmail at his word, it's not going to be that sci-fi. But the one kind of saving grace I've got is that that White Rose believes in a project that is actually crazy and dumb and won't work.
Yeah.
Which I think is entirely possible. People,
very much so.
You know, rich people can be blinded by their own biases and by their own grief. And
I mean, look at the Hyperloop.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what was that? The Theranos?
Sure. Yeah.
You know, you had so many rich, powerful people throwing their money over this pseudoscience shit because they just got caught up in this personality. And
look at the Cybertruck.
Yeah. So I look at the Cybertruck. Exactly.
I'm just throwing shade.
There's one man who had a crazy vision that just wouldn't fucking work, and everybody told him it wouldn't. And there you go.
I take your point, and I totally agree. I think it is far more likely the White Rose is delusional. She's mentally ill. And it's all been, you know, part of this I want my lover back thing.
Yeah. And, you know,
I'm living in an insane world. Like,
yeah.
I kind of get it.
Was the founder of the Theranos, Elizabeth?
I'm glad I don't know her name.
Yeah. I think that she hornswoggled White Rose into like, not only do I have a device that can do 1,000 blood tests from a drop of blood, but it also can bring back dead lovers. Yes. Yes. If I can secure your funding for round three, I can guarantee that feature will be in. Yeah. That's how it went.
Right. And I'm going to miniaturize it so it'll fit on your desktop.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it'll bring resurrect your lovers with something from the size of a thimble.
Of a thimble. It's just a 3D printer that just prints a plastic cast of their
in some kind of garish color.
It's like a hot pink.
Or it's like it just 3D prints at some kind of like not even like a real good love doll, just like an inflatable one.
Its main feature is it blinks. Like, oh, the eyelids move. Look.
Yeah. Tom W., watching the big reveal in episode 7 of Mr. Robot's origins as a protector of Elliot from his father's sexual abuse made all sense, all made sense, rather, given what we know about his role in Elliot's young life, as well as the role he's played this season. But it's hard to go back to season one and understand why it was this part of Elliot that was instigating the takedown of E Corp. Was this all a way to channel Elliot's anger away from the realization he was molested and his father may not have even been killed by the Washington Township Project? Otherwise, the retcon doesn't feel like it tracks through all four seasons.
Yeah, doesn't Christian Slater say something to that effect in this episode in the beginning? He kinda says something like, I needed to give Elliot something to do.
Yeah, and this is kind of like where I was going with the Memento comparison, that you've had a aspect of his personality hijack him to do these things. Or maybe, you know, there was this theory that we talked about a couple weeks ago that, like, Elliot's father didn't die at the Washington Township plant. It's just that he Control-C, Control-V, copy and pasted that for his father's death that he knew from his best friend as a way to not talk about what really happened to his father. And it could be that, like, he's doing all this for Angela. You know, that this is something that he's doing because he can't help himself. He can't, you know, there's nothing he can do to get justice for himself. His father's dead. The crime's already done, but he can avenge Angela's parent. I think there is something to that. But no, I don't think that, you know, his repressed anger at his child sexual abuse is literally being taken out on E Corp. I don't think there's a connection there. Moving on to Kirsten. I feel like the show would be making a fatal error if it turns out Angela's not actually dead, especially in light of the most recent episodes. At the end of the previous episode, Elliot made statements to Mr. Robot, to us, and to himself that he would not want to change the past, even though it's monstrous and tragic, because then he wouldn't be who he is. White Rose just tested that sentiment in this week's episode, and Elliot responded in the way I hoped he would, with the lovely, timely assist from Darlene. However, I've seen some upsetting theories about Angela's return after this episode. Elliot has just begun to attempt to cope with his past by integrating it with himself instead of constantly ignoring its existence and pushing it away. Bringing Angela back would fly directly in the face of this budding progress for Elliot. Her death happened, and that's final. The consequences of her death need to be dealt with. Trotting Angela out like some carrot on a stick is regrettable, but I choose to look at it this way. We got to see that Elliot is growing as a character, and it was in a way that tipped White Rose's hand, revealing how desperate she was when she realized this hooded pipsqueak was actually in the process of springing an effective trap on her. I'm pretty sure that Angela's not coming back in a literal, real sense. Mm-hmm. She could come back in some kind of phony, fakey, counterfeit sci-fi simulation way that could really play on Elliot's fragile emotions, but I think the Angela entity that we know is absolutely dead.
Yeah.
No.
I'm with you.
Unless Sam's been lying and she got replaced by a clone when she went in to be interviewed with her younger self, and that clone is the thing that came back and got killed, and that she's...
They haven't hinted at clones in this
I know.
Show.
That's what I'm just saying, that, like, that's the
I
only
answer. I
don't
think that's going to happen.
That's the only way, like, Angela could literally come back, as if, like, what we thought was Angela for, like, two seasons was some kind of bullshit replacement, and the real one's back in cryo sleep.
This was Watchmen.
That would make Sam Esmail a giant fat liar.
Yeah. She might be. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
We'll see.
Lucas G. I know this has come up a lot in previous seasons, but in this episode, there does seem to be another connection to the book or movie of Lolita. Darlene transfers the Deus's group's money to an account by the name of Dolores Hayes, which of course is the name of the 12-year-old girl referred to as Lolita.
Has been
in the novel.
All series. It has note. Like, that's nothing new.
Well, but they're going to get to something.
Okay.
There's additional similarities I would like to go over, Jim, and then use the ending of Lolita to propose an ending to the show. The protagonist of Lolita is an unreliable narrator, like Elliot, who uses a pseudonym. He falls in love with the 12-year-old girl and basically spends the entire book trying to sleep with her, eventually marrying her mother and becoming her stepfather. I've never read Lolita, and I hear it's a serious work of important fiction, but every time I see someone discuss the plot, I'm like, how? Mm-hmm. Like, how is this not just the world's highest class kiddie porn?
Right.
Like, what the fuck, man? He doesn't want to full out rape her because he's fucking classy. So instead, he finds a way to manipulate her into sexual favors, aka grooming. Now, we know the main. Yeah, I know. Yeah, he's a careful massacre of the bourgeoisie. Mm-hmm. Now we know that the main cause of Mr. Robot, the book seems an even larger inspiration and elements in the show. The book has a fictitious preface by a psychologist stating that this psychologist is presenting a memoir, which is an actual story. This idea of a story resonates with a lot of the show, I believe. The The show has actually done that, like the whole Alf thing, you know. Mm-hmm. Finally, the conclusion, the protagonist dies of a heart attack in jail after killing a different man who groomed Lolita. But I don't believe Elliot is modeled after the protagonist. I think he is more closely resembles Lolita, and she dies in childbirth on Christmas Eve, which would put us right around this time of year, although, of course, the timelines don't match up exactly. Mm-hmm. I think, therefore, that the third person out of Elliot is the real Elliot and has since he has been sleeping so long, it still has the mindset of a child. And the birth of this third personality will kill the Rammy version of Elliot and maybe the Mr. Robot alter as well. Basically, the Alderson loop theory, Elliot will reset and begin his loop again or exit the loop if it's a more of a happier ending. That seems reasonable to me and seems to fit like a lot of thematic things.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
And yeah, like for whatever reason, Lolita's been all up, and I mean, there's been like constant references to that both the movie and the book. So
interesting.
Yeah, I like the idea.
I don't know what to add on to that. It seems like you've pointed out all the stuff, and not having read Lolita, I don't know.
So good job there, Lucas. Thanks for taking a bullet and reading Lolita so I don't have to.
You're on a list.
You're now on a list. Doug L. says, this episode opened with what, to me, seemed like a clear reference to the Portal video game series. Did you see that one coming, Jim? In that game,
are you talking about the signs on the wall?
Yeah. In the game, you awake to find yourself in an AI-run test facility where you escape using a gun that shoots portals to solve puzzles and traverse environments. Specifically, you fire a gun to create a blue portal and an orange one. Walk into the blue one, you come out the orange one, vice versa. Beginning of the episode, Mr. Robot walks down a long blue hallway and emerges in a more orange-toned environment. Notably ahead of and then behind Robot is a symbol that looks strikingly similar to the game's logo of a person going through a portal. What's more, the blue and orange seem close to particular shades of those colors used in the game. Doug L. is exactly right.
He's 100% right. But what does it mean? It's like if they put Space Invaders or Pong or something somehow in the episode, what would it mean?
There was a claw machine in the F Society.
Right.
So why does it matter, Jim?
Why
Doug
does
L.
it?
Says.
Yes, please.
I've been nursing
me.
The idea that this show is about hacking. So White Rose's big machine should fit into that motif. It made sense that the machine could, in some fashion, hack the physical universe. But the episode's cold open suggests Elliot did something and recently woke. It would make sense that a sexual abuse survivor would craft a virtual world as an escape from that horror. This could explain White Rose's desire to use a device to break free from that world into another where, for example, her lover and Angela would really still be alive. What do you think? Is simulation theory an option here? Or in Portal speak, is the whole cake a lie?
Well, I mean the portals in Portal don't transport you in anything but physical space. So I don't know how you get out of this universe or whatever.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. This is a lot like saying, I've noticed several things, such as constant references to Back to the Future and time travels. Like, they are clearly baiting some kind of big sci-fi thing.
Yeah.
But also, they're publicly stating that it's not actually going to be a big sci-fi thing. So, I don't know how I actually feel about that. This is kind of like a cognitive dissonance that I've lived with for a few years, that Mr. Robot seems like it's about one thing, but it's actually about something else. Like, and I'd actually kind of be cool if this whole fucking thing was all about like surviving childhood sexual abuse, and that was it. That was the whole thing it wanted to say.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I don't know how everybody else feels about it, because there's still, if you look at the theory threads, there's still a lot of people looking for this android, looking for this AI, looking for this portal technology, looking for time travel, looking for a cyborg simulator. I mean, it's all there. It's absolutely all there to speculate on.
I think the difference here, the distinction to be made is the distinction between an homage and a motif, right? Like, an homage doesn't have to mean anything within the context of a work, but a motif and a theme would.
Mm-hmm.
So if these Back to the Future references are simply that, references, just homages to something that they love, that to me feels a lot more like what they're going for.
Except
than
for
if it's just...
Those Back to the Futures did pay off in resetting the 5-9 hack. Like, it didn't literally come true, but it metaphorically reset the plot. You know, like, there's a lot made that this season especially in the early goings, went right down, like very structurally and stylistically, had a lot in common with the first season.
And I think you can only tell the difference between the two in retrospect.
Yes.
So, like, we'll have to look back after the series ends. I don't know how much predictive power a reference has, yeah. Right?
And you can do anything. Like, there's some people saying, oh, if it's going to be like this, I'm going to be mad. If it's going to be like that, it's going to be mad. Like, more of like, is it good?
Yeah.
Did it make sense in retrospect? Is this going to be like the best case scenario is this show is the most rewarding rewatch in the history of rewatches. Like, if all this stuff tracks and you watch it, and like, holy shit, knowing what I know now, everything in season one is completely, everything in, like, even season two is much more interesting. Like, that is, I think, the brass ring we're going for. And it's all about the execution, yeah, and whether it makes sense in hindsight. And how much exposition you need versus how much of this is organic. Like, I just want it to be well-crafted. And the envelope of, like, honestly, if this is some kind of Matrix shit, and it blows me away, I'm just as happy as if it's just a, you know, some kind of metaphor about how much being abused as a child can fuck you up, mm-hmm, but also how much you can accomplish despite all those things. Like, so many different ways the show could end in a satisfying way for me.
Yeah.
So
same here.
Sean H has the final question. I was wondering if you guys were doing a series wrap-up podcast for Mr. Robot like you've done for other shows such as The Leftovers and Game of Thrones. I enjoy hearing you guys talk about television, Mr. Robot especially, but I know it's also a busy season. Oh boy. Mr. Robot's ending comes at an inopportune time, and that all good things must come to an end. Well, Sean, today we got kind of sort of confirmation through a source that cited USA Network, but didn't actually have a quote to point to, that the final two episodes of this show are going to air back to back on December 22nd. Mm-hmm. And if that is the case, then what I think we will do is take the week of Christmas off and then come back that next week and do probably a supersized episode where we talk about the double finale and we consider everybody's final feedback. That'll give everybody an extra week to get it in, and we'll just kind of do a combination supersized wrap-up finale episode. Because what we're not going to do is come in here on Christmas Day.
No.
I'm not going to tell my 12-year-old, hey, pause on the Christmas present opening. Let me go to the office, record all this stuff, and come back a couple hours later.
Right.
And honestly, I think even if we did we know what the traffic happens on, like, everybody, no one's listening to podcasts on Christmas Day. Yeah. So it's a bummer that the timing works out like this, but I think that's our best option. So that means you'll be hearing our thoughts on the final two episodes of Mr. Robot on this somewhere in the week of December 30th. And again, since I haven't had this hard confirmed, our plans could change. But that's how we're thinking about doing it now. But that, like I said, that gives you like almost a week and a half to get in feedback, and, you know, to think about the episode, and then we can send off Mr. Robot in style, you know, around New Year's Eve, I suppose. So that's all the feedback we have, and that's all the podcasts we have. We will be back next week, of course, with the next episode, White Rose's Revenge, which is what I think it's going to be. Please send your feedback on that one to robot@baldmove.com. Also, forums.baldmove.com if you'd like to discuss any episode of Mr. Robot with your fellow fans. We'll be back next week. Until then, I'm Aaron.
I'm Jim.
See ya.